What did you do this weekend? Perhaps you extended your holiday vacation or your New Year's celebrations a little bit longer because of where it fell on Thursday and Friday. But depending upon where you found yourself in the world, and if you're involved in a Christian community, you would be doing different things the beginning of this week in particular. Wednesday, January 6th, in Eastern and Orthodox Christianity, fully half of the Christian family, Russia, Greece, Armenia, Egypt, and so forth, they celebrate Christmas Eve on the 6th. And in France and Spain, Mexico, and other Latin American cultures, it will be the festive day, the Feast of the Three Kings, which is full of special food and celebration, and when the exchange of gifts is done. This January 3rd is the Sunday closest to January 6th, where Epiphany is observed. Actually, happens to be the exact anniversary date of the founding of this congregation, by the way, January 6th. We just like delay it until later in January, so like everybody's back. Anyway, but yeah. Epiphany. That's a sermon in of itself. I've never preached that Epiphany sermon. Anyway, so, well, I won't start it today. I have a whole manuscript core, you know. There you go. Okay. Epiphany, that word which means manifestation and revelation, appearance, actually, the showing forth of Christ. Epiphany. That's why our founding is an Epiphany sermon. Anyway, the period that follows the birth of Jesus. This season recognizes the appearance of Jesus to the world and the beginning of that ministry. And the first traditional story for Epiphany is the one we hear today from Matthew. And its central characters are those intriguing but enigmatic ones that they dwell in the Christmas pageants in our childhood or even adult imaginations. They enter stage, whatever side of the stage would be east. They enter stage left, right, from the east. They are in regal robes, likely three men or folks dressed as men. They're carrying ornate gift boxes with expensive, but let's face it, very odd baby gifts. And they stand or they kneel at a tidy manger. And they join a serene Mary and a pious Joseph, and some shepherds and a star twinkles overhead. There may be angels up there as well. And it is a familiar and lovely creche tableau. The curtain closes, and they're gone. Yay. Matthew's gospel alone is the one that gives us this story about the wise men and the star. And like so many other biblical stories, centuries of our traditions have both oversimplified it and have overembellished it. So like so many other Bible stories, each time when we visit it, particularly when I visit this story in the beginning of January every year, I do feel a certain pastoral responsibility to point out a few errors in our traditions. So Matthew tells us that these are magi. They are not kings. They are magi. And the word magi is from where we get the word magician. It's the Greek word for wise men, for astrologers, even sorcerers. These were the magi. They were likely a priestly class from Persia or Babylonian experts in astrology and the occult. They would be, frankly, what we would consider scientists of our day. Now, while they were not kings, the Magi were likely attached to the royal court and were probably themselves powerful and wealthy in some way. So they were Magi. The story names three gifts. Expensive, highly symbolic gifts. Gold, which is the wealth of royalty. Frankincense, which is an incense that's still used in worship today. And myrrh, which was a resin. It was about equal to its weight in gold, in its value, and it was used for perfume and anointing. So there were three gifts named, but it never tells us how many magi there actually were. We've assumed a magi, one for each gift, but there could have been three, there could have been 10, there could have been two. We simply do not know. And whereas Luke's story, where we're told that Jesus is born in a manger, not here in Matthew, Jesus is found in a house. So those lovely manger scenes with magi and shepherds at the same time looking at a baby in a manger, they may express a spiritual truth, but they do not accurately reflect the stories in the Bible. Those things didn't happen at the same time. So furthermore, the reference to Mary and a child being in a house, plus the stories, the gory details actually that follow this passage, which will be next week's sermon, indicate that by the time the Magi actually show up, the infant Jesus was certainly not newborn. Jesus may even have been a toddler by the age of 2. Much like that. May have been that age or older when the Magi arrived. So, now my annual duty is fulfilled in sufficiently shattering the manger scenes from your childhood. You're welcome. Now, when we turn our adult attention to this story of the Magi, without the embellishments of tradition, it is still a colorful and compelling story that has surprising details. It's a cross-cultural encounter that still begs our imagination with its details. These enigmatic, unnamed pagan priest scientists, the Magi, interpreted the signs that they saw in the heavens and knew that some great and auspicious event was underway, so they traveled from where they were in the east to Jerusalem, which was a journey certainly of many months, to pay homage to what they believed was the birth of a new king. They arrive in Jerusalem, the very center of Jewish political and religious life. So these wealthy and colorful characters, these leading practitioners of a foreign religion, who worshipped an altogether different god than the Jews, they were very noticeably Gentile. They could not have been more unlike the Jewish citizens of Jerusalem in their worldview. They went directly to the court of King Herod. They, of course, were comfortable with courtly life and knew how things worked, and it seemed the obvious place to inquire about a royal birth, assuming that a king, the seated king, would certainly know of such an auspicious event, which he does not. They apparently also assume that the news of a newborn king would be welcomed and celebrated, which it definitely was not by the court of Herod. Herod, and it says all of Jerusalem, was troubled because of this news that the Magi bore. So the location of the birth, Bethlehem, is confirmed by the Jewish equivalent of the Magi, the scribes and the priests. And then the Magi continue to follow the star to the place where Jesus was. They show homage. They're joy-filled, and they share their extravagant gifts to what must have been a shocked family. Can you imagine the shock and surprise? Then the Magi are warned in a dream, and they do not return to Herod, and they return by a different route. And they leave with the scent of fragrance and myrrh in their wake. So this magical, multicultural, interfaith scene ends, and that is the last the Bible tells us of the Magi. And we are left to fill in the blanks, which we do. Now, next week you'll hear about how Matthew tells Mary and Joseph to flee to Egypt, and you'll also hear about Herod's attempt to exterminate the political competition. But from the very start of Jesus' life, this revealing, this epiphany of the arrival of the incarnation of God was a remarkable, even miraculously good news, not just for chosen people, but to be celebrated and embraced by the whole world, really strikingly represented by these prominent magi. But just as it would always be, it may have been good news, but it wasn't easy news. The challenge to the established order would be met with resistance, sometimes even violently. So it is not really a simple childlike Christmas tableau, after all. I've always been touched by the final words of our scripture reading today. In the version that we heard, it concludes with the words, "They left for their own country by another road." The reason for taking another road being the dream that warned them, so the wise men make the very wise decision not to return to Herod's palace. But it has always seemed to me that there is much deeper meaning in those words. And I think the poem that we heard by Jan Richardson captures a bit of that meaning. The lengthy journey that had been undertaken, confronted over and again with unexpected choices and twists and turns on the path that would unfold before them, never really knowing exactly where you were going. And would you have embarked upon it if you knew? And her poem ends with the words, "Go home by another way." By another way. By another road, by another way. In just a few words, it seems that this passing comment captures an essential message of Epiphany, and I think an essential message of the good news of the gospel itself. First, God was and is doing things another way, not the way we expect. God is doing it another way, not the way we expect. A new king wasn't born amid royalty, but of an unwed mother in a borrowed stable. The first remembered witnesses are not the well-respected. In Luke, it's the unnamed shepherds who always lived at the margin of society. In Matthew, it is foreign magicians whose pagan religious practices were soundly condemned by Jewish law. These are the first remembered witnesses. So, by another way, the change that's going to happen in the world that God's is going to do. God's revolution is not going to happen in the expected ways, through the avenues of power or might or violent uprising, but through something as simple as one finds in the birth of a child. That is another way we do not expect. So it seems that when we find ourselves expecting that God's realm of peace and love and justice will arrive through the election of a given political candidate, however skilled or ethical they may be, that God's peace will arrive through armed peacemakers, that the passing of a new legislation, however good and just it may be, or through a judicial system, that God's deep justice will be achieved, or that it will be achieved through our ever more savvy and sophisticated efforts at organizing and mobilizing. As people of faith, we should pause to remember that that's not the way it happened the first time. That may not be the way it happens this time. So just as God works in another way, ways that differ from ours and our expectations, God will also draw others in ways that differ from us. So one of the curious things to notice about this story is, presumably, everyone could see the same star in the sky. I cannot imagine it went unnoticed in the ancient Near East, a new star in the sky. And the sages, the priests, and the scribes of Herod's court also could see the star, and they, in fact, knew the location of the birth. They told the Magi where the new king was born, yet they themselves stayed behind. They didn't take that step on the journey, leaving or risking their comfortable lives or patterns, maybe not believing the sign that they saw. Those are not remembered as the wise ones in the story. God was working and drawing in another way, not through the ways and the roads of established power or established knowledge, be it political, be it religious, but by another way. As in this story, some of the established ways may be broken, or also, as in this story, that may be helpful in some way. They might guide or lead or point in a certain direction, but when it came right down to it, the Magi had to follow the star themselves. No one could take the journey for them. No one could bring the gifts they carried. No one could do their spiritual work on their behalf. They were responsible to take and complete their own spiritual journey. After they encounter Jesus, we hear nothing further or glimpse nothing more about how this journey and how this encounter affected them. We don't know if they converted. We don't know if they evangelized. We don't know what happened, nor do we know what happens after they return home. But just a moment of reflection tells us that someone does not undertake that kind of journey, that kind of pilgrimage, and have a face-to-face encounter with the incarnation of God and remain unmoved or unchanged. To truly have an encounter with God's other way is an epiphany. It is a revelation, and it means that we ourselves will go by another way. This is not, to steal a phrase from Reverend Elder Jim Matulski, this is not just a period piece. We can be modern magi. We can journey earnestly on our way, take the steps. We don't need to know the end of the path to begin the journey. A journey of seeking to welcome the new and unknown divine that is born. We may journey, some of us, with a clear and a careful and purposeful path, maybe even with extravagant things along the way, but journey we must. And as with those first magi, the journey following a star will lead us to an encounter with God. And like the Magi, that encounter, that epiphany means we may return home, but it will not be by the roads and the ways that we have already traveled. It will be another way.